On a calm evening in May 1960, three Catholic priests took a rowing boat across Loch Ree on the River Shannon. They were in the midst of what had been a quiet fishing holiday, but as the sun dipped towards the horizon, they saw something unexpected. A dark shape gliding through the water, large, silent, and, they thought, alive. Within hours, the media had latched onto their story and the Loch Ree monster was born. Newspapers splashed it across their front pages, reporters flocked to Athlone, and a businessman put up a reward for the creature's capture, dead or alive. Wild theories took hold. Some swore it was a prehistoric animal, others suggested it was, wait for it, a Soviet submarine. The story would eventually draw in old IRA men, amateur hunters, and a high-powered British investigative team, among many others. To learn more about that story and its eclectic cast of characters, I'm joined by Ian Kennelly, historian and our History Show researcher. Let's begin with the discovery with the three priests. Who were they? What did they see?
Okay, so it's the 18th of May 1960 and these three priests are on their fishing holiday. They are Richard Quigley, Matthew Burke and Daniel Murray. It's about 9 or 9.30 in the evening and they see this shape, a dark shape, moving silently through the water. They don't know what it is, but they observe it for quite a while. When they come back to shore, they start telling locals about what they'd seen or what they'd encountered, to put it that way. The word reaches a guy called Colonel Harry Rice, who'd been formerly in the British Army, stationed in India, but now living in Athlone. Very well-liked character, still remembered in the locality to this day, but he's also very well-connected. And he immediately rings press offices in Dublin, Independent, the Press and so on. And the story, you know, gathers legs or gathers fins immediately. And the press starts putting it on their front pages, because that's initially how I discovered the story. I was researching a package last year on the state's response to nuclear war, and I was looking at the front page of the Irish Press one day and I saw, you know, three priests on a boat see a big monster, and it immediately grabbed my attention. So you can see that immediately there's this furore, and the priests have, you know, effectively become side characters as the press latches onto the story and it becomes more outlandish over the following days.
And one of the priests involved spoke to RTE for a radio documentary in 1979.
It was moving on a straight line, and we all three of us watched it, and its movement was very smooth. It almost glided at a very slow pace across the water, causing little or no disturbance. It gave the impression of swimming with some flippers or that would be much deeper down in the water. And we watched it, and a minute or so, I don't know how long it was, because we were kind of fascinated by the appearance of the thing. And then, almost as a submarine submerging, it submerged, and it just gradually sank the head and the leading section and the hump, submerged under the water.
And that was one of the three priests who made the sighting, speaking to RTE in 1979. So that's where the story begins, but what was the local reaction then?
Well, immediately there's public meetings and so on, and there's a lot of speculation in the locality as to what it is, and there's kind of two strands of thought. There's people who, like Harry Rice and others, who tried to discern what it actually was, that it was a trick of the light or that it was a mundane, everyday occurrence that was just misidentified. And then there is speculation among some that it is some kind of creature. And Rice himself comes to the conclusion that it's a coelacanth, which was famous at the time because that was a fish that was long believed to be extinct, known only through the fossil record. But in 1930s, it was Marjorie Courtney Latimer, a South African naturalist. She discovered living examples of the fish, and that became a sensation at the time. So that was in the public consciousness, but, you know, that's a fish that is a deep sea fish. It lives at 700 metres or up to 700 metres depth. You know, Loch Ree is at its most 36 metres deep. It didn't fit. So that solution was put aside. And as some people tried to put a scientific spin in it, others were looking at more macabre or fearsome aspects of the story, and fishermen came forward to say that their boats had been attacked or they'd nearly been dragged under the surface of the lake by something pulling on their nets. And there was even this story that the creature's body had been found on the banks of the Shannon, and that just turned out to be a dead cow. But then that story morphed into a different tale, that the cow had actually been killed by the creature that had pulled it into the water to feed. And so you can see that there's these different stories. But then as it develops, people can see that they quite enjoy the press coverage and the media coverage that's in the locality. And there's some people say that there's a potential for commercial activities, you know, that Loch Ree can become a rival to Loch Ness in the monster tourism stakes. And people push that aspect. But then others, you know, it is at the height of the Cold War or during the Cold War, and as those Cold War tensions are running through. And a local councillor called Frank Waters suggests that apparently military aircraft had been spotted over the lake in the weeks leading up to this sighting or encounter, and he put forward the idea that these military aircraft may have been Soviet and that they may have dropped a miniature submarine into the lake for whatever reason, who knows. But that obviously the press picked up on that, and it helped the story grow.
Now, some locals, obviously, they had a scientific or more likely a commercial interest in the story. Others had a rather more bloodthirsty attitude.
Yeah. As the story developed and people came forward with this, you know, tales of being harassed by the creature, you see letters in local newspapers such as the Westmeath Independent and so on, suggestions that, you know, we should bomb the lake. And one fisherman, and that actually becomes a reality, as we'll see in a few years later, but one guy writes to the paper saying he's a fisherman in the lake, and this creature, whatever it is competition. So the best way to do it is to destroy it. And another guy suggests that, another letter writer, that the lake should be electrified somehow and that'll kill the creature. But then Harry Royce intervenes, a kind of a save the creature movement opens up temporarily in Athlone. And he says, look, no, this is a, you know, there's two reasons. It's a living creature. Apparently, we shouldn't kill it. But also, if it does get killed or captured, it'll end up in the Natural History Museum or Dublin Zoo, and Athlone will have no benefit from this wonderful discovery. But the most concrete example is an old IRA guy, well known in the town, from a family called the McCanns, Tom McCann. And he's a business owner, spent a lot of time in New York, and he puts forward a reward for the capture of the creature, £100, dead or alive. And now that doesn't bring any big game hunters to Westmeath, but it does bring attention in the form of what's called a frogman, a guy called Ernest Camlin from Belfast, who travels down, you know, with flippers and underwater equipment. And amazingly, the press follows his journey down from Belfast, and the Sunday Independent reports that he's on the way to Athlone, and a huge crowd turns up on the day that Camlin arrives in the town, and they follow him to the lake, and he goes underwater, but surprise, surprise, he doesn't find any creature. But that's the tenor of how the debate develops over the week or two after the initial sighting.
You'd expect this to be a 9-day wonder, that by the end of 1960 everybody would have forgotten about it. But in fact, that doesn't happen, because it gains attention, the story, in Britain. And British figures really keep the story alive after May 1960.
Yeah, what you have is this group, you know, in the 60s and 70s, it seems to be the height in Britain of this craze for the Loch Ness Monster. You have this group called the Loch Ness Phenomena Investigations Bureau. And now on the surface, you know, they sound like a bunch of cranks, but they're actually very well funded, and they're, the figures that run the organisation are very well connected to the highest levels of British society. There's a guy, David James, who's a member of the Conservative Party. He's an MP. He'd been recently featured, or was just about to be featured, in This Is Your Life. So he's a well-known figure in Britain. You have Peter Scott, the only son of Robert Falcon Scott of the Antarctic. You have Richard Fitter, a reporter with The Observer. Constance White, she's a medical doctor but a very well-known author, supposedly the world's foremost expert on the Loch Ness Monster. And you have a guy, Norman Collins, who was formerly director of BBC Television and key figure in the foundation of ITV. So these people can fund any kind of crazy escapade they want to do. And one of their associates, Lionel Leslie of the Castle Leslie, the family and the estate in County Monaghan, brother of Shane Leslie, a cousin of Winston Churchill, very well-known figure. He travels to Ireland in 1965 after the Bureau had first made contact with one of the original figures in the story, Harry Royce, and he had given them as much information as he could on the initial 1960 sighting. So they come over to Ireland. Leslie comes over to Ireland in 1965 to search or hunt for the monster. Now, by that stage, the hunt had expanded beyond Loch Ree, because it had inspired sightings all around the country. You have sightings in Loch Derg, you have sightings in Loch Corrib, you have sightings in Loch Fada in Connemara. And, you know, if any listener's interested, a lot of these were recorded by RT Television at the time. You had the late Bill O'Herlihy and Cathal O'Shannon doing reports, and they're up in the RTE player. So there's a lot of interviews, including including with Lionel Leslie on the RT player. And by this stage, Leslie decides that Loch Fedda is his first opportunity, his prime goal, and he travels there to find a monster, but he's not looking to photograph it. He decides to set off explosives in the lake, apparently, as he put it, to force the creature to the surface, and then he could either capture it photographically or finish it off. But one way or the other, they'd have proof. And this is all captured or reported on in the Times and the Independent, the Irish press. They're all eagerly following the story, and Leslie says that his next goal is to travel to Athlone and to set off explosives in Loch Ree, but he doesn't seem to have ever got permission to carry out that particular dream.
And Lionel Leslie also featured in that 1979 RTE radio documentary.
I was with the Loch Ness expedition investigating, and we got a report from the Irish Inland Fisheries enclosing a report from Father Quigley and two other priests from Loch Ree. And so I was so very interested, I went over to Dublin to interview him. I was very impressed by it because it was what he told me was so like the Loch Ness monster, only in miniature. It might be a natural freak, like the African lungfish, which can last out the whole summers in hard-baked mud by suspended animation. These creatures might do the same sort of thing in the peat. There are stories of them boring in the peat. And also they might live on decaying organic matter.
Lionel Leslie talking on that RTE 1979 documentary on lake monsters. So the Loch Ness Phenomena Investigation Bureau, they didn't find it what they were looking for. I think they were looking for something called a plesiosaur, which would be a pretty coelacanthish as well. So they didn't find anything on Loch Fedda, anything on Loch Ree. Was that the end of the story?
No, the story goes on because, yeah, as you said, Leslie was looking for a plesiosaur, which was, you know, if anybody with small children who are into dinosaurs would probably be familiar with the creature. They were a form of marine reptile that shared the planet with the dinosaurs, long extinct 66 million years ago. But the thing with Leslie and all his colleagues in the Loch Ness Bureau is they, and to digress quickly, they had been taken in by a photo that had been published in the British Daily Mail in the 1930s. Now, at that time, as you know, the Daily Mail was interested in monsters of all kind, whether Mussolini and Hitler are the Loch Ness variety, and they had published what was called the surgeon's photo in 1934. We now know that was a fake, but at the time that had apparently shown a plesiosaur-style marine reptile with big body mass, long, slender neck, a small head in Loch Ness. And that kind of established the public idea of what these monsters look like. And it was somewhat similar to what the three Irish priests drew in 1960. But, you know, surprise, surprise, they didn't find evidence of any such creature in the Irish lakes in any of them. But the story continued on over the following decades. There's multiple reports in RTE. ITV comes over to Ireland in 1980 for a show headed by Arthur C. Clarke, the famous engineer and science fiction author, and they reassembled the three priests in Loch Ree, and they told the story again. And even up until 2001, there was scientific or purportedly scientific expeditions to the lake. A Swedish guy, Jan Sundberg, led what was called the Global Underwater Survey Team looking for monsters in Loch Ree. And again, spoiler alert, they didn't find anything. But he spoke to the Irish Times at the time, and he suggested that whatever people had seen was likely to have been a creature called a lamprey, which is similar in shape, at least, to an eel, but has a very fearsome mouth when it opens its mouth to attack with multiple teeth. And that led the Irish Times to use the cringeworthy headline, "The Loch Ree Monster Finally Brought to Eel." And I think that's the general tenor of this story. But as of this moment in time, there's never been any conclusive proof as to what the priests saw on the lake in that evening in 1960. But I think we can safely disregard the Soviet submarines, plesiosaurs, coelacanths, and so on.
So whether it was a trick of the light, whether it was submariners from Russia, an overactive imagination, or something truly mysterious, who knows, lurking beneath the waters of Loch Ree, the legend of the monster sparked wild speculation at the time and a media frenzy. Ian Kennelly, thanks for bringing us the saga of the so-called Loch Ree monster.